I mean, the result, and that's clearly that the intent of the states, is that the consumers in their state will pay sales tax on the things that are taxable in that state, whether they go downtown and shop or whether they go online or on the catalog and shop.
Hey, gang. Welcome back to Future Proof. I'm Bill. Today's show is going to be a little bit different. Instead of talking about what's going to happen tomorrow, we're talking about something pretty important that's happening right now. I'm talking about a Supreme Court decision in June that clears the way for out-of-state retailers to collect sales taxes from customers, even if they have no physical presence in the state. Specifically, the Supreme Court struck down a 1992 ruling that established a physical presence threshold for when states could tax remote sales. So there's still a lot of uncertainty about how, about the ramifications of this decision and about when and how states will begin implementing the new sales taxes. A number of state tax groups, including the Multi-State Tax Commission, the Federation of Tax Administrators, and the Streamlined Sales and Use Tax Governing Board, they're holding meetings this summer in an effort to clarify the ruling, and folks representing the retail industry are pushing for the creation of a work group that would inject some uniformity into how the ruling is regulated. In the meantime, though, the world of sales taxes just got a whole lot more complicated. So I sat down recently to talk with Scott Peterson, who is Vice President of U.S. Tax Policy and Government Relations for Avalara, which is a company that makes software that provides automated tax compliance. And in the interest of transparency, Avalara is a strategic partner of the Maryland Association of CPAs and the Business Learning Institute. So Scott walked me through the impact this ruling will have on retailers, on consumers, and on states themselves. And one thing I found interesting, a lot of the coverage of this ruling has been focusing on the online retail world, about the fact that states can now tax online purchases. But Scott says the ruling goes well beyond that. So Scott and I talked about the impact this ruling is going to have and what accounting and finance pros should be telling their clients to help them prepare. Important stuff here. And it all just proves the futurist Daniel Burris was correct. Regulation and legislation, it's a hard trend, folks, and it ain't going anywhere. So here's Scott Peterson. Scott, so thanks for being here. First, let's break this down in layman's terms, if you can. What did the Supreme Court decide?
The Supreme Court really did something very simple. In its basics, they overturned two previous decisions that they had made that established the rule for which states can make a seller collect sales tax. So they, in 1967 and in 1992, the United States Supreme Court said that a seller must have substantial nexus with a state before the state can impose a sales tax collection on them. And that substantial nexus meant a physical presence.
Okay.
And for 50 years, the states and the industry argued about what substantial nexus meant, what physical presence meant. And this year, the Supreme Court said the resulting discussions and court cases and challenges that have occurred in the last 50 years had created a situation where plain odd outcomes that came from physical presence. So they repealed the concept of physical presence.
Okay. And the area where most people are talking about this, it has to do with online sales. So any kind of transaction that happens over the internet, correct me if I'm wrong, but now that potentially could be taxed at a state level. Is that right?
That's correct, but the thing that the Supreme Court said, in addition to, well, when it replaced, it needed to replace physical presence. And in over the last 30 years, it's been developing an alternative test to determine whether or not a state tax was unconstitutional.
Okay.
And there are four parts to that test. And the first part was, is there a connection between the seller and the state? And the court said, you just can't simply rely on physical presence. In addition to that, they listed things that they thought South Dakota's law did that they thought met the other tests. And those, they included state administration of all the taxes. They included a small seller threshold and simplification. Well, the small seller threshold, so to get you, the long answer to your question is, the states that are adopting laws like South Dakota's are including a dollar threshold below which you don't have to collect sales tax. So the answer is yes, online sales are going to be very likely subject to sales tax everywhere in the United States, but not every seller is going to have to collect sales tax everywhere, because every state that's doing this is including a de minimis. So if you're in the most commonly used number is $100,000 in sales. So if you're a seller that makes less than $100,000 in sales in South Dakota, their law doesn't apply.
I gotcha.
So you may be doing exactly the same thing as somebody else. They're making $100,000 in one sale. They have to start collecting sales tax. You're making $99,999. You don't.
Got it. Okay. Very good. So I mean, there are going to be implications far and wide here. Let's talk about some of those. First of all, for companies, in particular companies that do business online, imagine there's going to be huge impacts here. What's the impact going to be for them?
Well, the first is that they need to figure out where they're making sales. And the advice that we're giving to people is don't panic. Sort your sales by state.
Okay.
Because that's how you know whether or not these laws apply to you. It's not, okay. You know, historically, and frankly still today, you have a seller has to know where they have physical presence.
Okay.
So they really have to keep a spreadsheet of all the states that shows where they have their employees, where they have their warehouses, where they have their inventory, you know, where they travel, where they install things.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and this is one more thing that they have to add to that spreadsheet. Where do I make sales, and in which states do I exceed their threshold? So start by sorting all your sales, a dollar volume and individual transactions by state, and then figure out whether you have the physical capacity to administer that and all the other state sales taxes.
Mm-hmm. So, and you talked a little bit about complying here. Complying with this strikes me as something that could be rather complex and expensive, especially for smaller companies. Is that a concern?
And that goes back to the threshold thing. South Dakota's law says and that with their $100,000 threshold, they told the United States Supreme Court that a company that's selling, a nationwide company that sells $100,000 into South Dakota is very likely a $30 million company nationwide.
Okay.
So small sellers are likely not going to be impacted by this at all.
Okay.
Or they're going to be very minimally impacted. I talked to a lady from Sioux Falls, South Dakota yesterday morning, and she had read about this. She talked to her accountant, and her accountant says, well, you need to call up Avalara because they can help you. And the first thing I said, what do you sell? How do you sell it? Where do you sell it? And how much do you sell? Mm-hmm. And when she got to $300,000 a year, I said, including her store, I said, this law is probably not going to apply to you.
Mm-hmm.
But sort all your sales and then call me back. And if you've exceeded $100,000 in any state, then we can have a conversation about whether or not you need to use Avalara. And so that's the real challenge is, I mean, first, don't panic, because this law may not apply to you. And second, if you had to do this all by yourself, it's going to be complicated. I mean, there's things that you need to know to collect sales tax successfully. I mean, you need to know how to get a license in that state. Usually takes 25 minutes per state. You need to know what the tax rate is, state tax rate. And if they have local taxes, you need to know what the local taxes are. You need to know what the local boundaries are. I mean, you can't rely on a 5-digit zip code. That just doesn't work anymore.
Yep.
And you need to know what they tax and what they exempt. Then you need to know how to file a return and how to make a payment. All those things for one state are relatively straightforward. But once you get past three states, our experience anyway, you need someone or something to help you do that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, at about the four states, you need to hire an accountant.
Right. Right.
Or you need to contact us or somebody like us.
Got it. So beyond tracking what they're selling, where they're selling, any other advice you might be able to offer for companies about what they should be doing with regard to this ruling at this point?
Well, the next thing is they shouldn't assume this is an online sales tax issue. This is a sales issue.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody who make sales across state lines needs to think about whether or not this law applies to them. 2 weeks after the court decision, I had someone, an accountant from Atlanta, call me and said, I've got a client that sells construction material, both commercial and residential. They have a website, but it's just for advertising purposes. The only way you can make a sale from them is through one of their salespeople. And they've got salespeople in 3 states, but they make sales all over the United States, and they ship everything by common carrier. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, what do you think their sales are a year? He said it's $400 million a year. He said, they're going to blow through all the thresholds in every state, guaranteed. And he joked, he said, you know, they called me and they said, I heard about this online sales tax thing. And the CPA says, yeah, it's not online for you, but it applies to you. So people need to think about how they make sales. If they do what's called remote sales, and a remote sale is a sale made from your state into another state.
Okay.
By whatever means that you do it and that it's delivered to someone, then this law probably applies to you, and you need to start tracking your sales and thinking about how you're going to do it.
Does this apply to goods and services?
It applies, yes, but very kind of haphazardly when it comes to services.
Okay.
There's a rule in sales tax. Every state taxes tangible personal property, you know, goods, unless they're specifically exempt. So the law in every state in the United States that has a sales tax is we hereby impose a tax of X percent on the retail sale of tangible personal property. And then, you know, 2 pages later in their law, you'll see a statute that says, we hereby exempt manufacturing equipment and agricultural equipment and all, you know, so there's this list of exempt things. But their law starts with the presumption that if it's tangible personal property, it's subject to tax. The reverse is the case for services. Okay. So in every state except for 4, it's the reverse. And in all those states except for those 4, the rule is all services are exempt from sales tax unless specifically taxed. And that's why you see, and if you look through the laws of, let's see, what's a good example? Oklahoma, which taxes very few services, but they tax telecommunication services. And they have a statute that's very specific to telecommunication services. And so DC, you look at the DC sales tax law, you'll see that they tax yoga services and things like that. But they're very specific and they're very select and they're very few.
Yep.
South Dakota, and they're very different from each other. So the services that the very few services that DC taxes are very different from the very few services that Oklahoma taxes.
And you mentioned
South Dakota, New Mexico, Hawaii, and West Virginia have the opposite rule. In those 4 states, all services are taxable unless specifically exempt. So in our particular conversation here, Hawaii, New Mexico, and South Dakota tax accounting services.
Okay.
So any accountant, regardless of where they're located, who will exceed that $100,000 in sales, and you know, and sales is, you know, an invoice, or 200 separate invoices in those states, is going to have to get a license to start collecting sales tax on their accounting services.
Wow.
And lawyers and engineers and architects. It's in those 4 states, it's a really, really, West Virginia is a little bit different because they tax all services except professional services, which means engineers, architects, attorneys, and accountants.
Right.
But every other service is taxable. So all software as a service, all anything associated with software in those 4 states is taxable. It's just,
amazing.
It's wild west there.
Yeah. And tell me again, those 4 states?
Hawaii.
Yep.
New Mexico, South Dakota, and West Virginia.
Okay.
But the first three, Hawaii, New Mexico, and South Dakota, are the ones that tax all the professional services.
Got it.
Yeah. Okay. I think the only thing that's actually exempt in those 3 states is like healthcare.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So let's move on to individuals. So what's the impact for this going to be on at an individual level? Just, you know, your normal everyday consumer of these goods and services, how's it going to impact them?
They're going to find very few places that aren't charging them sales tax. I mean, the result, and that's clearly that the intent of the state, is that the consumers in their state will pay sales tax on the things that are taxable in that state, whether they go downtown and shop or whether they go online or on the catalog and shop.
So if I go on to Amazon and buy a book, I can expect to pay a state sales tax on that going forward.
Yes, you can. Yep. And I mean, if you go to barnesandnoble.com or, you know, if you go to, I live in Nashville, and you go to our little local bookstore, Parnassus Books, you go to Parnassus Books website, yep. You know, they're very likely going to have start charging you sales tax. I don't think they do today, but I think they're going to have to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And for states and state economies, I mean, this could potentially be a windfall for them, right? Or at least for some of them.
If it isn't, they're going to be very surprised. Because there's almost every state that's adopted this law has already spent it. Mm-hmm. Utah went into special session last week. I think it was last week, and adopted this law, made it effective January 1, 2019, and exempted a certain amount of manufacturing equipment at the same time. Okay. So if they don't get a windfall from the online sales part of this legislation, they're going to have to dig deep in their pockets to find a way to pay for the manufacturing exemption they just created.
Right.
And that's, I mean, South Dakota's debating lowering their sales tax rate. There's two or three other states that have already announced that. Oh, Nebraska said they'll use it for property tax relief. So that, yeah, that's if there isn't a windfall to these states, they have written bad checks.
and I mean, does this give states like carte blanche just to start taxing anything that happens? I mean,
always had that right. I mean, that's the deal with being, you know, sovereign. They've always had the right to create a tax structure that suited whatever needs they were.
Yep.
They've always struggled once in a while to figure out a way of implementing what they've done. And that's the deal with the sales tax. I mean, the sales tax, you know, was created in 1930, and it was immediately obvious to everybody that there's a huge hole in the sales tax. And that is, if I just drive across the state line, I don't have to pay it, which is why they created the use tax a couple of years later. And the use tax is that tax is imposed on you and I as a consumer, which we're supposed to pay when we buy from someone who doesn't charge a sales tax. Huge hole in the use tax, and that is states have no idea what you and I buy. And so every even though they have pretty much carte blanche authority to create whatever tax structure they want to create, sometimes they come with pretty onerous administrative responsibilities that maybe sometimes can't even be realized.
What's the time frame for all this going into effect, or does that depend on which state we're talking about?
It depends on which state we're talking about. The Vermont and Hawaii and Kentucky's law went into effect on July 1st.
Okay.
This is also new, and it caught states so much off guard. No state whatsoever, even though several states had the law in effect, because they just wanted to be ready in case the Supreme Court agreed with them.
Yep.
No state was really ready. Hawaii and Vermont and Kentucky's law went into effect on July 1 with 9 days notice, it's really an uncomfortable position to put anybody in.
Yeah, exactly.
And so uncomfortable that just yesterday, Kentucky changed their notice and said, even though our law went into effect on July 1, they're going to consider everybody to be in compliance with their law if they're registered, if they have a sales tax license, and they're collecting on October 1.
Crazy.
Yeah. So the majority so far, there's three dates that are being used frequently. Two dates are being used frequently, October 1 and January 1. I think we've got 8 or 9 states that are in October 1 and 5 or 6 that are in the January 1. And then we got one, Connecticut, that's on December 1. And then there's a bunch of states that, truly half the states, have no law and have not said what they're going to do. And so in those states, you know, most of them, their state legislatures are out of session, so they're not even in a position to adopt a law. And so it's most of us presume that this will be something the legislature addresses in the spring that probably goes into effect, you know, say July 1st of next year. But certainly by July 1st of next year, every state should have this law. Every state with a sales tax, anyway.
Yep. Yep. So, Scott, for sellers, this is not a short-term issue. They're going to have to be paying attention to this for an extended period of time, correct?
Very, very true. The phase-in is probably not the right word, but it's kind of what it looks like. Three states law went into effect on July 1st. 8 or 9 states are going to go into effect on October 1st. 1 state, December 1st. 5 or 6 states on January 1st. A bunch of states are going to do something between now and the July 1st of next year. And every quarter, we're probably going to see half a dozen states whose law goes into effect. So from it right now through probably the end of July of next year, every seller in the country is going to have to go back and do the math all over again. Okay, I didn't exceed the threshold in Kentucky and Vermont and Hawaii, and so I'm okay there. Here comes 1st of October. I need to go back and do the math. Am I going to exceed the threshold in any of the states that go to effect on October 1? Deal with the repercussions of that. Oh, here comes Connecticut on December 1. Am I going to exceed the threshold in Connecticut? Oh, here comes January 1. And you're going to have to do the same process multiple times throughout the next year. And frankly, every CPA in the world who has a retail, wholesale, or manufacturing client needs to be calling them and asking them, can you sort your sales by state? Where do you sell? What do you sell? Because now, the how do you sell thing is kind of a back burner thing, because now it's what do you sell, where do you sell, how much do you sell? That's the three things that every CPA needs to ask their clients. And can you give me all your sales transactions for the last year if you can't do this math yourself, so I can do this math for you?
So from a CPA's point of view, what kind of advice would you offer CPAs as they advise their clients on what this issue is and what it means?
Well, first, sellers need to know. They need to be able to ask them whether or not they can sort their sales by state. And I've talked to a lot of sellers in the last month, and some it's very simple, some it's not so simple. And so a CPA needs to be able to give advice on is there a way to look at that their client's data and sort them by shipping address? Because that's the issue, is shipping address. So is this sale going to Colorado? Is this sale going to Wyoming? Is this sale going to California? And then put them in a spreadsheet, and you have to do it both by volume of sales, so dollar volume sales, and then transactions, which while no state has done a very good job of defining what a transaction is, it's got to be an invoice. So look at individual sales and sort them by state, and then look at where the states are setting their thresholds, because they're not all doing 100,000. Georgia, it's 250. I think Indiana, it's 200. And there's a couple others that are somewhat a little bit above 100,000. Mm-hmm. So far, 100,000 is the floor. So that's the first thing. Where are the clients making sales? Then you got to figure out what they're selling.
Okay.
And then you have to decide if they're selling something that's taxable in that state. So they may make, $1 million a year in sales into Oklahoma of something that's not taxable in Oklahoma. So, if that's the case, then, the CPA can kind of set that client aside for a second and focus on somebody else.
Right.
Or at least set that state aside and focus on another state. Then you have to figure out all the other things. How are they going to file a return? How are they going to make the payment? How are they going to document the exempt sales? How are they going to get a sales tax license? And then look to see what does the accounting software or shopping cart software that they're using have the capacity to calculate sales tax using multiple rates, because there's multiple rates everywhere. Almost everywhere there's multiple rates. Just about every state has local governments with a sales tax. And in every case, the state expects you to charge the rate that's specific to that local government. So there's 283 cities in South Dakota with sales tax, plus 7 Indian reservations with a sales tax. And so when you're making a sale in South Dakota, they expect you to look and know the boundaries of the Indian reservations and know the boundaries of the cities to charge the right sales tax rate.
Wow.
So a CPA needs to know that. Which of the states have one rate, like Kentucky or Michigan or New Jersey? Which of the states have multiple rates, like just about everybody? And then you put Alabama, Louisiana, Alaska, and Colorado in a separate bucket. Because in those four states, the local governments, not only are there local governments that have a sales tax, there's local governments who administer their own sales tax, which means they have their own Department of Revenue. They have their own sales tax return. They have their own tax differences. So it gets really, really complex. And then they need to look around and see how they can use tools that exist today that already handle that complexity. Because there's you know, us and our competitors, you know, that's what we do.
Right.
You know, we and them have all built these little platforms that exist in the cloud that have all that complexity built into that platform, and the seller just needs to be able to collect us, tell us what product they're selling and the shipping address, and we do everything else.
And something tells me as long as legislation and regulation continues to be this complex, you guys are going to have plenty of business.
Well, yeah, I don't comment about our businesses, but we're just starting to feel the effect of something states have wanted for 50 years.
Yep.
It's back when this first case, first case in 1967 was Nashville Bellis Hess versus Illinois. Well, they were a catalog company. And, you know, for them, it was pretty onerous concept. And everybody in the last 50 years has built a business around physical presence.
Mm-hmm.
They've all said, oh, okay, I know. My CPA has told me that I don't have to collect that state sales tax because I don't have a physical presence in that state.
Mm-hmm.
So they've all built business models around, where they make sales and then where they have their physical, where they're physical. And they know that, okay, if I create a warehouse in another state, that means that I need to ask the tax department, can you handle sales tax in one more state? And if you can't, what's it going to take in the tax department for me to make sales in another state because I want to put a warehouse in that state?
Yep.
Which is frankly, that's an everyday conversation in every business this country that sells on multiple channels.
Yeah. So yeah, we're going to obviously be dealing with the repercussions of this for a while. And this is obviously the big one, but what are there other sales tax issues that you guys are watching that CPA should be aware of at this point?
Like I said, most state legislatures have gone home for the year. So we're not in the adopt new taxes phase of the world or of the year. So that part's a little bit easier. You know, one of the things that I'm always surprised when I talk to sellers and to find out how much they sell overseas.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that CPAs need to have an appreciation for. What is the complexity that comes from selling overseas? I mean, I'm shipping into Germany, and I've got a customer in Germany. I love this customer in Germany. They love me. How do I make sure that the value-added tax that Germany imposes on that transaction is manageable for them? I mean, do I want them to be surprised when they go to their little post office and pick up the package that I sold them, that, you know, the postman is going to charge them shipping and value-added tax and maybe a customs duty?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that part of the world is the thing about the internet and modern logistics is that the whole world is open now.
Right.
And while people ship in here all the time, we ship out all the time.
Yep.
And everybody has these little roadblocks at the border that keeps or creates the opportunity for a really bad customer experience. Because if I'm selling something to Germany and I haven't told them that there's a value added tax they're going to have to pay when they pick that up, then I'm not going to be very happy when it shows up.
Right.
I mean, I've had this happen to me. I've had stuff shipped to me where it shows up and I've got to pay a customs duty on the product that was shipped.
Yep.
And it, you know, we put duties on there isn't a duty on everything. And some, you know, sometimes the customs duty is higher on, often it's higher on one thing than it is another. So you never know when you're making the purchase with what your rate's going to be. So that's something that if sellers really want to be in a position where they can sell seamlessly, regardless of where their customer is, they need to understand that process and have something in place that helps them create a, you know, a positive customer experience.
Right, right. Okay. Well, good advice. And thanks for being here, Scott, and helping make sense of what is obviously a very complex issue and one we're going to be watching for a while. So I appreciate you being here. Thanks for the insights.
You're very welcome.
That was Scott Peterson, Vice President of U.S. Tax Policy and Government Relations for Avalara. You'll find more resources about the ruling, including FAQs, tax calculators, and a whole lot more at avalara.com. That's A-V-A-L-A-R-A.com.